and welcome to the Art of Balance podcast, brought to you by Balanceology, with me, Dylan Cox, and my wife, and author of the best-selling book, Burnout to Brilliance, Jane Morris. Jane is also a regular contributor to Psychology's magazine. Together, we take a light-hearted approach whilst doing deep dives into topics that we believe can help improve your day-to-day lives. If you like what you hear, you can follow us on Instagram at balanceology.uk, or alternatively, visit our website, balanceology.uk. In today's episode, we're talking about winning and how a winning mentality and the desire to win can override your whole personality and lead to you wanting to compete with everyone and everything, both at work and when at play. And that winning mentality is often regarded as a great thing in our society, but sometimes it can be to the person's detriment to always want to win. And they can lose sight of the reason why they're actually doing something. So in today's episode, Jane and I are going to be talking about connecting with the root reason that you're doing something and reframing winning so that it's not the only thing. Improvement is great, but not when you're doing it to the detriment of yourself or others, and therefore you're not doing it in balance. Hope you enjoyed today's episode. Episode 19, the Art of Balance podcast with Dylan and Jane. We're back again, and today's episode is all about winning. Jane, we've just witnessed the 2020 Olympics from Tokyo, although it was actually in 2021, very confusing. And today, as we record this, as we live and breathe, is A-level exam results day, which is obviously all about achievement, I guess, yeah. And that is kind of wrapped up in winning. So we thought we'd talk a little bit about what is winning, what does winning mean, and is it really necessary to always be a winner?
Can it hamper us?
Can it? I don't know, I've never won anything. Although I did win once, I think at a football camp when I was like 9, I won Best Attitude award. Yeah, which I still got at my parents' house, a little award. However, I went on a basketball camp when I was 15 and I got kicked out of the team for having a bad attitude, so how things can change.
Oh dear. Yeah. I'm intrigued. I've not heard this story.
It's not one I'm proud of, but I think I was going through my kind of like, you know, teenage angst kind of years, and I was at this camp. I think it was at Loughborough University, and halfway through it we were playing a game. There's loads of, you know, teenagers there and stuff and being coached and playing games and stuff. And yeah, I lost my cool with one of the referees and I got sin binned for a whole day. I wasn't allowed to play basketball for a whole day of this like 6-day camp. So yeah, and they had a big talk to me about, you know, respecting officials and having a good attitude. I did say, you know, 6 years prior I had won Best Attitude Award at a local football camp.
They didn't take that into
account. But they didn't seem to really value that, which is a shame. But
let's not tell our children that story.
No, they don't listen to this, fortunately. So, interestingly, though, sort of semi-linked to that was that I think basketball was like my favourite sport growing up. I'm going to use sport as an example because that was where I kind of felt more comfortable as a kid, whereas you were probably more comfortable in the classroom, Jane, being the bookworm that you were. So I used to play basketball, and it was the first sport I played kind of like it was like a real... I was playing other sports as a kid, but I didn't really choose to play them. I kind of just like went along and played them. But basketball was one I sort of chose to play. And I think I was kind of like competitive, but I liked winning, but I didn't really, really know what it meant to try to win like properly. And I wasn't motivated by winning, I guess, is what I'm saying. Whereas, you know, just watching the Olympics, you see these stories of athletes, swimmers, boxers, archers, sailors, all kinds of sports, and these people have dedicated, you know, years if not decades to that one moment of trying to win a gold medal. And then you hear the interview afterwards, and sometimes I think this is what sort of sparked my interest in this particular topic for a podcast was that you hear them talk afterwards and they seem a little bit kind of deflated almost. I mean, there is that kind of emotion, but there's also a slight kind of feeling of what next.
Yeah, and it reminds me of the different themes that you've shared in supervision calls that around with your clients in terms of that void when the goalposts just keeps moving. And I think that sense of deflation can, in fact, be even more filled with emotion than you describe there, in terms of when somebody's all about winning and it means so much to them, that to the extent that if they get, say for example, a silver instead of a gold, that is such a failure for them that they don't know how to cope
with. It's quite heartbreaking, isn't it? Because I saw that, like Ben Whittaker in the boxing, you know, I'm quite a big boxing fan, so I was following the boxing closely, and he lost his gold medal match against an incredible boxer, and he just seemed so, I don't want to say disgusted, but so upset that he didn't get the gold, that the silver didn't mean anything to him. He didn't even, I don't think, like when they had a photo after he was on the podium, he took it off, he had it in his hand, the others had it around their neck sort of thing. And obviously, that was quite disappointing for him. And it was the same the previous Olympics when Shakur Stevenson won a silver medal as well. He was the same. He was just distraught. And I think you feel sorry for them because they've placed so much emphasis on the gold. They're not able to realise the achievement of A, getting to an Olympics, and then B, getting to an Olympic final, and C, getting so close. I mean, they've won on multiple occasions to get to that point. They're not, and I wouldn't call them this, and I don't think they call themselves that. They're not a loser for silver. They're still a winner,
And yet, in their own eyes, they feel like they've won nothing. I can relate to the feeling, because when I was young and I was very driven and.
Oh, is this when you did gymnastics at the Olympics?
Yes.
You forgot to tell me about that.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot to tell you about my days in gymnastics. No, I'm talking about on the academic side. Although I did compete quite a bit with karate and back in the day, but no, more on the academic side, where if I had been predicted certain grades and results, and then I always struggled in the exams, I never seemed to be able to just keep things calm and access all of the information that was somewhere in my brain on the spur of the moment quickly enough to bring it all together in an exam. And so as a result, the grades I would be predicted, I then wouldn't always get the grade, and I'd still do exceptionally well in terms of, like, if you compared me to other children in the class or something, but I would feel on results day absolutely deflated and disappointed and just completely down. I didn't want to celebrate because I hadn't got what I felt I was capable of or that had been expected of me. I felt like I was almost letting somebody down.
So who were you letting down, and why did you feel that weight of that expectation then?
I think when somebody else confirms or predicts a certain level of success that you're capable of, almost as if it's sort of set in stone that you're going to get it, because why wouldn't you? You're capable. Then if come the day you don't deliver on that, I think for me that was quite, it just felt to me like, I'd let nobody was, that wasn't like I went home and my parents said, oh, you've let us down, how disappointing. The very opposite. They were thrilled that I'd done as well as I'd done. And I didn't want to share my results with any of my friends because I felt like my own disappointment in my results would be like a kick in the teeth to any of them if they perhaps hadn't even done as well as I'd done. Then what was, if I'm not happy with my own results and I think that they're not great, then what does that say about their results? How can I then feign enthusiasm or celebrate their success if they haven't actually done as well as me, and what I've done is not enough for me, because it feels like it's not good enough.
I think we live in this society now where we're completely measured against things all the time, right? Mm-hmm. So from a young age at school, we've got star charts or certificates, and they are sort of founded in improvement, I guess, is the real one of the main kind of reasons that we would do those things in schools and stuff, is to track your improvement. But ultimately it is about achievement, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think that's not always the healthiest approach to schooling or sports or work, and especially when you bring in the competitiveness to it as well. So It's not fair in a classroom of children, say, that are of different abilities, and each child has their own skill set, their own way of learning, their own kind of time that they'll take to do something. You know, we've seen it with our own kids. It just doesn't seem fair sometimes to be them to be measured against others on a similar goal. You know, it seems a bit.
Well, I think that's then where the compulsive comparison stems from, and we did touch on that possibility then for a competitive type of nature to then be cultivated in a child, which then carries on into adulthood. And if you combine the need to succeed, but at an extremely high level, so setting this bar for yourself that is very, very high, and then if you've got that combined with a competitive streak, that the result of that can be somebody who's not really particularly nice to be around. And an emptiness inside for the person who's stuck in that framework, in that way of operating. It's quite soulless. It becomes a pursuit, not because there's a passion or something welling up in you that's kind of upward spiraling of positive energy, but instead like a vacant void, or you referred to it earlier on when we were discussing the topic loosely before beginning as robotic,
and also it can be a bit of a burden as well, I guess, can't it, this feeling that you always have to achieve. And I remember talking to a client once, and it was about something outside of work, and it was like a marathon, and they got the time that they wanted, they went under the time that they wanted, and I sort of asked them how that felt, in a very coachy way. You know, how's it feel, man? Tell me feelings about that. And they were like, yeah, it feels great. No, they didn't. They were like, I can go faster next time. They were already thinking this big goal that they had, that they'd trained for, that they'd planned for, that they executed on the day. It wasn't enough.
Yeah.
There's something else. Okay, I can't put myself in the shoes of an Olympian or even someone like that, because I haven't achieved those kind of things myself. But from the outside looking in, it felt like, what's the real reason you're doing this? If it's not bringing you the fulfillment at that juncture, and maybe it is the momentum of just going from one thing to another. But even that, I don't know, just talking to different people who've come with similar kind of, they've come with similar things that they wanted to work on in their coaching. But what's really been unpicked is that they haven't deeply connected to a goal or deeply connected to an aim that they are working towards when they think they have, but it's just superficial.
Yeah.
And what's really driving them is they're searching for a feeling, or they're searching for a sense of fulfillment.
Yeah.
That in that example, you know, I would suggest, and I'm not there to suggest when you're coaching, but I would suggest in that example is, let go of the confines and the constructs of an organized event where you're racing the clock and you're training in a specific way towards something, and reconnect with what you really love about running, and or you really love about cycling, whatever the thing is. You know, it could be gardening, it could be work, it could be whatever. And then do it on your terms. Don't build it into something else that's there to be measured, because sometimes the measurement can be healthy, but other times it can be a burden. It can weigh you down, and you know, if you feel free about doing something and you're doing it solely for yourself, and that's hard, right? Because, you know, we live in a world where we're getting instant gratification for, you know, anything. You could put a picture of you, oh, look, I just pulled a weed out of my garden, and put it on social media, and someone will still like it, right? And you'll feel better about yourself maybe for 10 seconds. But you're silent at the moment, and am I rambling?
No, I was thinking about the social media side of things. I think that's another strand to all of this as well. So you've got the high achievement, sort of fulfilling the expectations perhaps that have been predicted of you. There's one strand, and somebody could be completely consumed in that. So for example, that was me, and I wasn't competitive, but somebody else could be. It's the competitive piece that pushes them and drives them, and they might have that in tandem with the high achieving thing.
Yeah.
Then there's this other strand of the verification, the external kind of verification from people. So for me, it was more of an internalized somebody would have said, like a teacher or something, in a report, oh, you know, Jane has the potential to go on and be from, you know, stage to stage to become a first class honours degree student, like that would have been said. And then that was an internal thing in me then. I didn't almost need another teacher to say anything about it. I'd already taken that in, and that was set in my track. My tracks were set with that. That was where I was to head.
Do you know, that's really interesting.
Well, I was just going to say that for somebody else, though, it would be about, with the external side of things, it would be needing to hear from other people. And that is where this piece with the social media comes into play, where you see people who, every stage of the journey with something like, say, a CrossFit event or a pentathlon or an ultra marathon or a weightlifting event or something significant like that, that they're gearing up towards, would be something that they'd feel they needed to share externally, so that they get that kind of, what do you call
gratification.
It?
Gratification.
Yeah, so that they get that gratification from people around them saying, oh, how well you're doing, what a great job, oh, how incredible you are.
You're all validating. These things,
like validating themselves. Yeah, exactly. And that's something that could come along with the competitiveness and the high achieving, or it might, that in itself could almost be a self-standing thing that means someone puts themselves through something. But again, it's still soulless, because they're not doing it from a place of passion, and they're not doing it from a place of nourishment, self-nourishment and self-actualization. They're not being fueled from within themselves. Their drive is coming from an external source.
Yeah.
And therefore, that's why it feels robotic. That's why it feels empty when they reach the goalpost. It's not a nourishing coming to the end of a cycle, or a natural kind of closure on something, like a chapter that they've been working towards. So the opposite of that would be, if you can think of somebody, say, for example, somebody who has had a dream of building a home in a particular way. So take, for example, Grand Designs. You may have watched a Grand Designs program.
Big somebody fan. Has what won, up, Kevin?
Wanted to have a home in a certain way, and they've worked towards creating that home with their partner, perhaps, or with a small team of people. And each stage of that journey, they've enjoyed, they've reveled in, because it's been a piecing together of this vision that they've held. And when it comes, they are absolutely ecstatic with the result. They are, you know, thrilled.
I don't think you've watched enough episodes, Jane.
Well, I'm not talking about every single person, joking. Because if somebody approached it in a different way, it would be that empty goal, okay? Yeah. But I'm talking about someone who's creating it from within themselves, because it's an extension of themselves. It's an expression of themselves. It's a purpose piece. But and then
this is a really important.
The fruits of their labour they get
to enjoy.
Yeah,
but I think the word there is, it's a creative process. And often when people are doing art or creating music, they're so involved in that, they're not thinking about the kudos they're going to get for it afterwards. It is an expression of themselves. But for some reason with exercise or work, we don't apply those same kind of rules, do we? We kind of forget about that sometimes. Not always.
And yet I think that if we can connect that piece in the sports world or in the
working world,
academic world, yeah. Or so for me, for example, writing my book was an example of that. That was a creative,
and I'm sure there are plenty of people do, yeah.
And it was a fulfilling endeavor, and it wasn't an empty thing at the end. It felt fabulous, and it's something that I use and refer to over and over. It's, and equally, I could relate that to, say, in martial arts and in karate, you've got the, with competition, you can compete with another opponent and you're getting points in the same way that you would do with boxing, okay? But you can also compete in a where you do a display of a series of what's called a kata, which is like almost like a gymnastics display, a form of moves all put together, right? That in and of itself is like art. And to me, that was my favorite part of karate, because, and it wasn't for, I never actually enjoyed competing in karate, but I enjoyed the feeling of growing in confidence and growing in a sense of myself when I participate in karate. And the kata for me felt like some kind of piece of art. I loved it. And I do believe it's possible through, say, other art, other sports forms like gymnastics, diving, you know, where there's a beauty and a sort of majesticness or magnificence that other people can...
Yeah, I think you can find that in any sport. I think you can look at any sport and there is that majesty in there. I wasn't saying that there aren't numerous Olympians or sports people or people in the working world that aren't able to transfer that feeling of creating something into that setting. Mm. It just seems that some of the ones that I saw had this feeling of like, what's next? What, I need to achieve something more, and they didn't get to live in that moment for long enough.
Yeah.
But there are plenty that do. You know, you see some of the athletes there that are in their element completely, and you know, the winning the gold medal is great for them, but you get the sense that them just being there is amazing. And I saw that in the skateboarding. Like, it's weird because skateboarding is a kind of community sport, I guess. It's like different to traditional Olympic sports. And you see that all the different countries like hugging after that they were competing and stuff. And it was like, you know, they were all bringing each other up, which is a really nice feeling. It's not like this kind of ultra competitive environment where they're like staring down the opponent and stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess in a combat sport like karate or boxing or taekwondo, whatever's at the Olympics, it is a bit more, you have to get into that space, I guess, to compete. But one of the things you mentioned earlier was about, you know, how a report can sort of, or someone else's viewpoint or the story that they give you can play on your mind and then stay with you while you're like working towards something. So you're, you know, you may have been told that you could achieve this further down the line.
Yeah.
So on the flip side of that, like, so my reports were always like, could work harder, not achieving his full potential, could try harder sort of thing. And that rhetoric stayed with me for most of my like life up until I sort of realized that it wasn't my story. It was like somebody else's interpretation of, you know, I'm not saying I didn't try at school, but I didn't try. I didn't do very well subsequently, but
didn't do very well, but I think you
I didn't
your
care
learning
about, yeah.
style was also still back learning. In those days not being accommodated for.
I just don't really know what my learning style is. It's like not learning is my style.
You definitely learn through doing. You're definitely a very kinesthetic learner, I believe, from what I know of you. And back in those days, in a classroom environment, there was very little of that going on.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? I mean, like, and, you know, teachers back then, they had a lot on their plate. Yeah,
now.
Yeah, but I'm not complaining about that. But it's just the story that you can live by can change. And I think that's why I have a disconnect with this kind of feeling of winning. Because, again, I'm not saying that people who win or aim to win or be the best at something or do something well, I'm not saying that that's bad. I'm not saying they all feel empty after they're doing that either. It's just, it seems so foreign to me because I don't have that drive and that that will to do it. But the experience I've had from working with people and just talking with friends and stuff is that it's not always all it cracks up to be. And there's got to be more to it than winning. And that's what I guess we try to get to the bottom of with coaching is like, what is that root feeling that you're looking for? What is the root of what is propelling you? You know, what do you really want to be your drivers? And you've come across it as well, right? And with high achievers.
I mean, it's usually one of the key reasons behind burnout, not always, but usually it's in the mix somewhere, this sense of needing to overachieve, not just to achieve but overachieve, and then not knowing when to stop, and those goalposts constantly shifting.
And is overachievement in some people's minds winning as well? Is it like, I've got to be the best, or is it just I've got to be the best version of myself, or have I got to beat other people to be
like
the best?
Like I say, it's not necessarily competitive, but for many, there will be an element of competition in there. And so whether it's this continued feeling of the need to better oneself. So I think I might have mentioned about that mantra that I learned, for example, that good, better, best.
You preach, sister.
Never rest until your good is better and your better is best. That was, again, something I learned as a child, that was very much a personal endeavour. It was my own best I was ultimately trying to strive to follow versus looking over my shoulder and needing to compare myself to anybody else. That, for some reason, wasn't in the mix for me. But But for other people, it certainly can be, just dependent on what other variables have been there in their early years of their life and along the sort of teenage years as well.
I think it's very easy to look at it like from one way or another, and I don't want to sound like I'm coming across as like you have to be soft, man. You can't, you know, winning's like aggressive and it's not a good thing to be a winner, you know. And because the argument the other side is like, you know, like society is built on that kind of perception of, you know, doing your best, being better, to push forward industry, to push forward human endeavor and stuff like that, you know. Like if everyone had an attitude, oh, I just want to connect to the root of my feelings, man, we wouldn't have got to the moon. Why we went to the moon anyway is a different question in the first place, but do you know what I mean? Is it like because I'm just trying to critically look at the opposite side of the argument to me, which is people might be listening and thinking, no, but winning's good, you know, I need to push myself, I need to try and be the best, because if I don't, then I may be afraid of what I would be if I wasn't, you know.
So in that, I feel is the answer that people are scared of what they would be without the accolades or the demonstration of what they've achieved or the medals or the whatever. Like, who are you without these identities that are like put on you? And who would we be if we were more? I know you're sort of mocking it, like, oh, you know, that at one with nature or whatever, but who would we actually be if we had stayed fully connected to the nature within us that would, at one stage, had we not separated ourselves from it, have valued the environment around us as much as anything that we were, so say, working on, or that was an endeavor, or because we've done everything really at the cost of our home, the place where we live, and this pursuit of success has been not only detrimental to our
health, by and large, well-being. Not everybody's done it to that.
No, we're talking about extremes though, at the moment, aren't we? So we're talking about like what happens when somebody is so focused on winning, so competitive, so high achieving, that then becomes out of balance. And at large, essentially, that is what we have allowed to happen collectively to the planet. We've gone all gung-ho,
like,
yeah, a hell of a lot of excess, and then the cost is the crises that we find around the planet at the moment and everything being so out of whack. And so but that last little piece that you said there indicated that there's a fear of finding out who you actually are without those other pieces that are almost the societal conditioning.
Like these clothes that you put on top of yourself.
Yeah. So who would you be if somebody told you you never have to turn up for a competition ever again, that like competitions are cancelled? Like, who would you be without that? Who would you be without needing to get a GCSE, an A-level, a degree to get anywhere in life?
Be unemployed.
But who would you be if you were free to simply follow what felt good, what you felt genuinely lit up and passionate about, and you knew that you just following that was enough? There didn't need to be a certificate to prove your worth. There didn't need to be a job title or a level of status in society that you'd reached, or a marriage to somebody from a certain class or religion or whatever it is that was deemed to be appropriate enough or good enough or whatever the enough. it's all these external things that we can get caught up with. And that very last bit there that you said, I feel is what's really at the root of all of it, is who are we
without these things?
All of these things. The emperor's, what's that? Emperor's new clothes, where they kind of fool the emperor into thinking he's wearing clothes, and that the clothes he's wearing are invisible, and really he just walks down in the procession in his birthday suit and is so proud of himself and happy, and really he's just walking down naked.
A nice analogy there, Jane, and a nice cultural reference to although we're not encouraging you to actually take off your clothes and walk around naked.
Although...
just your metaphorical clothes.
Although...
no, don't go there, Jane. It's in this kind of podcast.
I do think that, as a metaphor, it could be something quite deep and transformational to explore what happens if you take pieces of yourself off, almost like garments, and explore who you are without wearing them. And one very quick exercise that is very powerful when it comes to doing this is what's called mirror work, where you stand in front of a mirror. You can be naked if you want to be, but you don't have to be.
I don't like all this naked chat.
You look in your own eyes in the mirror and you say to yourself the words that you haven't perhaps been hearing from within you or from outside of you, but are what you're actually seeking all along, which is some sort of reflection back to yourself of appreciation for you without any need for achievement, without any need for these successes being celebrated, a value of yourself and an honouring of your own worth, that you are good enough, that you are worthy of essentially of love. So what I'll ask people to do is to look at in their own eyes and say, I love you, and then the person's name. So I would look in the mirror and say, I love you, Jane. And at first it can feel a bit strange when you try it out. And some people can even find it too difficult to say. There's often quite a lot of tears that come with this. So I know you're going to make some joke about
it. I'm not. I'm being deadly serious.
It really can be very, very powerful. And what can come then from that, you can work with somebody to then go a bit deeper and to ask more questions to yourself and to really start to reveal those hidden layers of you, so that you start to activate the parts of you that have maybe been dormant for a while because of filling these other expectations that others have placed on you subconsciously. And nobody's, I'm sure, been meaning any harm through any of this, but ultimately what can happen is you almost end up not connected to who you are and more connected to these external scripts and narratives and things that you then end up
buying into.
Yeah, you know.
And I think that's when you do connect with something like that, then if you do try to do something or you compete in something, then if you win in that situation, once you've done that, that feeling, the winning maybe wouldn't have driven you, but the winning would feel somewhat more wholesome than, yeah.
Absolutely. And one of the other things
in whichever context that is,
where we, you know, we've known athletes in our time at an Olympic level who were there because of the passion that genuinely did come from that place within and wasn't about an external thing at all. And they didn't really care about winning, but they were able to compete at that level simply because there was a natural inclination there and an aptitude that they happened to be blessed with. But
and a lot of hard work, I'm sure, that went behind that.
Yeah, absolutely. But from a different place, a very different place.
Is that exactly, where is it coming from and where's that being translated into? A little bit deep there in the end we went, but hopefully that's helpful to you. These are just our thoughts on winning. We're not saying that winning is wrong or that trying to compete and better yourself or improve yourself is wrong at all in any shape or form. It's just trying to look at it from a different perspective, especially if you feel like sometimes when you're striving to achieve,
or you've burned yourself out through not knowing when to go for it and when to restore and hold back. And if you're ultimately maybe not allowing yourself rest,
or if you strive to do something, you thought it was something that would fulfill you and it hasn't. Maybe it wasn't the act of what you did that didn't fulfill you, it was the actual purpose of why you were doing it. So, you know, going back to that one client talking about a time that they achieved and they wanted to go better the next time, they did say to me afterwards that the thing they enjoyed the most was the training. And, you know, the actual race wasn't enjoyable, but the training was great. And so there's something to learn from that as well, perhaps. Anyway, we're going to wrap it up here now. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us, hello@balanceology.uk, with any questions, with any thoughts. And if you want to inquire about coaching with either Jane or I, or Jane and I together, We hope you have a great week, and we'll catch you next time on the Art of Balance podcast, dudes.
Bye.
I really hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Art of Balance podcast, and it just made you think about winning, hopefully in a slightly different way. It might not all resonate with you, and what we do say is just our findings and our opinions, but we do hope to give a different perspective sometimes, so hopefully that worked for you. Now, I just wanted to quickly mention again about Jane's specific burnout retreats. Burnout's been coming up more and more in the press, and definitely has been rising amongst the issues that clients coming to us have. And Jane, being an expert in burnout, having written Burnout to Brilliance, the best-selling book, some 6 years ago now, has been working on burnout with clients for a number of years. And she's managed to formulate this excellent 3-day retreat whereby you don't just skim the surface of your issues with burnout, you really go deep and within yourself to find out the root cause. Because once we get to the root cause, we can make the big life-changing differences that need to be made so that you don't fall back into burnout. That can be quite surprising what you come to, and some of James' clients have changed career, some have reworked their jobs in certain ways so that they suit their lifestyle better. And ultimately, a lot of it has been about bringing back in balance. And that's what we specialise at here at Balanceology. So if you'd like to find more out about those retreats, or you'd like to find out how you could work with either Jane or myself, or both of us, then do drop us an email at hello@balanceology.uk. Have a great week. Stay safe. We'll catch you next time. Bye.